Okay. It would be nice to think that there's some factory out there that produces pastors or leaders or international workers or Christian leaders. The reality is that leaders are brought up and raised through the church. As local churches identify people in leadership and invest in their lives and help them understand how to listen to God's call, God does call people to serve in far-off places. Mindy grew up in Everett, and she's been a part of the Alliance Church in Everett since she was really young. And so today, as she speaks to us, she's speaking as one who's loved Christ for a very long time and a person who's dedicated her life to serving Jesus no matter what the cost. So Mindy, thank you for being with us today. We're excited to hear what God has laid on your heart.
It's great to be here with you guys today. As Pastor Tim said, I am from the Everett vicinity, so not too far away. It's great being home, and I've enjoyed this. I'm on a six-month home assignment right now, so I've enjoyed my time home with family and my home church and just the chance to rest as well as the opportunities to share in the local Alliance churches. Just a little bit about what I did beforehand. Before I get started on my sermon that I prepared, is I work for Envision Mexico. As the video stated, there are about 20 sites, and they're actually located all around the world, as well as I think there's now 5 or so located even in the States for cross-cultural experiences here nationally as well. Before I came home in September, I was working in Ensenada, which is considered the Cinderella of the Pacific of Mexico. And it's located right up there near San Diego, or so I guess from here, down there by San Diego. It was about a 2-hour drive away, which made it super convenient. We had the privilege of being the closest Alliance missionaries to the United States, which has its pros and cons. But I have been there for 4.5 years, and Envision has actually been at this location for about 12 years now, or had been at this location. When I left in September, I actually shut down this ministry there in Ensenada, and I'll be talking about that in a minute. But while we were there, we partnered with local churches and served the city, and so this is the city of Ensenada, and that's our ministry center that we had, which has now been turned over to the National Church of Mexico, the National Alliance Church of Mexico. So that's where we had all of our groups. When I go back in March, I am actually relocating this ministry to Guadalajara, which is in central Mexico. So we'll be away from the ocean and a little bit more landlocked. I'll be about, I Googled it, Google mapped it, and I think I'm going to be about 6 hours away from Puerto Vallarta and 6 hours away from Mexico City, like right in between those two. It's about 5,000 feet sea level Anyway, so it's it'll be changed, and it's a city of about 5 million people. So it's pretty large, a very urban city, just like we said in the video, which is one of our focus of Envision, to be strategically located in urban cities. And I've got a couple pictures to share of the city of Guadalajara. That's the main Catholic cathedral in downtown Guadalajara, and then in the next picture is just a picture of the large city that it is. Ensenada was only a city of approximately 500,000, so we're going from about 500,000 up to 5 million, and it will come with lots of change and adjustment, to be sure. But I look forward to getting started there. I'm actually planning on landing there March 14th, so if you want to pray for me, I would welcome any prayers for that transition as I settle in, find a home, find a car, all those things that come with starting at a new site. I have no idea where groups will be staying and how I will feed them, and anything of those details, those will all get figured out as well once I'm there in March. And I have people coming this summer, so I've got a couple months to figure all these things out before people come. But yeah, that's a little bit about me. And we'll, again, in Guadalajara, be partnering with the local national churches. The Mexican Alliance has about 60 churches nationwide. And it's a pretty young church altogether. And they are only just within the last year have finally cast the vision among themselves to start raising money to send out a missionary, which really excites us. That has been our goal since the beginning, was that they would become a mission sending church. Their hope and their desire is within 3 years' time to raise enough money to fully support a missionary to the 1040 window. So we join them in that prayer that will happen, and maybe even surpass that God can do exceedingly more. So hopefully maybe even more than one person can go. So I was warned prior to coming home that the climate in the United States had changed a little bit in the time that I had been in Mexico. Now, I didn't live under a rock, but I rarely watched the news because of just the mental energy of having to translate it all from Spanish to English. And so really the only news that came my way was through Facebook, which is a very poor source of news. But I had been warned that the climate had changed to where it was one now where people get easily offended at everything and angered by everything, which is kind of ironic because we live in a tolerant society. But I was warned that love and unity can be rarely seen. But that, of course, in unique moments like the solar eclipse that passed by in August, I think it was, or the Olympics that are coming up, or other tragedies that happen like the hurricane in Houston or in other parts, Puerto Rico, for example, that's when the anger and the unrest kind of calms down and attributes of peace and love can once again be seen. And so what I heard didn't really surprise me. I had already started to pick up on this kind of unrest through Facebook and had seen this develop. But her warning did sadden me. Since the statistics show that the people inside the church really behave quite similar to people outside the church in many ways, it made me wonder if the church is missing something by focusing on the world, focusing on what's happening around them. And how often do I miss something by looking or by being distracted by the busyness that's around me? Now, I don't know how many of you guys have heard a sermon on the book of Habakkuk, or when you've last read or studied the sermons, the minor prophets, but I want to start my sermon by sharing a verse from Habakkuk, and let me just preface it by saying that I am taking this out of context, and I know this. If you read the book of Habakkuk, God is giving the prophet Habakkuk a word for the people of Israel, basically to say that their destruction is coming. And even this verse here is about that destruction that's coming. But I share this today because I still believe it has a relatable truth for us. It says, "Look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your day that you would not believe even if told." Habakkuk 1:5. And I love this verse because I believe that it's applicable to our God and to the age that we live in. God is at work among the nations, and he is doing amazing things. And the question just becomes, will we see these things that he's doing and observe them? Will we be paying attention and wonder at his work? And will we even look for ways to join in with his work? Or are we going to be blind and consumed by the things that are happening around us? So how can we live intentional lives instead of just getting caught up from one grievance to another grievance, which is the way the world seems to be right now? So my question is, how can we live intentionally, and what does that mean? An online dictionary says that the word intentional means something that was done on purpose, something you intended or meant to do. Some of the synonyms for intentional are designed and planned. So there are many, many verses in the Bible that talk about that one can use to talk about being intentional. In fact, if we just even kind of brainstorm the list right now, I think we could come up with a pretty list, lengthy list of verses that would talk about how we are to behave and how we are to act towards one another and to the Lord. And when thinking about these verses, it's pretty easy to understand how it can end up feeling like a to-do list, something that we need to check off, and it can feel a little bit overwhelming. So you might have a life verse that helps you focus on how to live according to God's word, but I'm going to pull from John chapter 15. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open it to 15, but the verses are also behind me on the screen. So John 15 says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As a branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, it is he that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. By this, my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples." Now, if we just pause here momentarily before going on, how many of you guys have read this passage and felt the pressure of bearing fruit lest you get cut off? I have. Like, I read this and it kind of, like, growing up, whenever I read this, it just kind of felt like I had to somehow produce enough fruit lest I get, how does it say it in verse 6, get cut off, gathered, and thrown into the fire and burned. And so it just became this like overwhelming sense of like I had to somehow measure up. And it felt like, it can feel like a bit of a to-do list, an obligation that I somehow, yeah, had to measure up and complete. I had a lovely chat with Sherry about a year ago, and she helped illuminate this passage in a new way that I hadn't considered before. So let's continue reading. In verse 9, it says, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept the Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." Well, so I don't think, now I think that this passage really, the crux of this passage has to do with these verses. It's not about producing enough, measuring up, checking off the to-do list. It's about the love of the Father and abiding in that love. I'm pretty sure it was Sherry who told me this example of, like, imagine if you had a chair, and I'll just, I guess, maybe use a stand as my example, since I always forget to bring a chair up. Let's say, like, this is the vine, and I'm connected to the vine, like, I'm connected to it. And the way that I used to view this passage beforehand was that, like, I'm connected to the vine, and I'm out here doing all these things, trying to, like, bear fruit and measure up and complete this list. And I think now what these verses are really saying is that I need to position myself this way towards the vine, and it's all about this relationship, the love of the Father. And as I receive the Father's love, and as I love the Father in return and worship him and live in this relationship, he's going to grow the fruit out here. I don't have to do a thing. I just have to be focused here on this relationship, and he grows the fruit on its own. He does his work of multiplying, making disciples and multiplying and bearing fruit. And I get to have, instead of having exhaustion by doing all this work, I get to have joy and love by being in this relationship. Instead of doing being committed in obligation, it's again joy and love between the Father and myself, and he bears the fruit. Now, of course, there will be pain. If any of you guys are into gardening, You know this fully well, that the gardener, after all, does prune his garden. But he does so just for the purpose of bearing more fruit. And so we can even have joy in the midst of painful pruning to know that God's love for us, like that he's allowing this for the purpose of bearing more fruit. And what a joy that we get to be a part of that, even when he's working on us, even when he's pruning our lives, that he is doing his work, no matter how painful it might be, to bear more fruit through us and through our relationship with him. And that's just wonderful. These verses here in John 15 mirror the well-known verses in Matthew 22. In Matthew 22, it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself." These two commands can't be separated. I am way too sinful and flawed on my own to love my neighbor well. Without loving God, I become self-centered, and then I don't love others. And then if I love God, if I only love the Lord and I don't love my neighbors, well, then frankly, I'm disobeying what God commands me to do, which really contradicts my words then about loving the Lord, because I'm disobeying him. But if I love the Lord and desire to obey him, then I'm going to naturally love others as well. They go hand in hand. The first part about the relationship to the vine and the branch, the first part about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind is related to the passage loving the vine, or being connected to the vine, and we are the branches. And then the second part about loving our neighbors ourselves, that's the part of bearing fruit. When I love the Lord, when I'm bearing fruit, I will feel compassion for others. I will serve people, and I will hurt for them in their pain. And I'm going to want them to know the Father's saving love. So they go hand in hand, those two verses, or those two passages. The Alliance mission theme for this year, I'm not sure if you guys have posters of this around, but the theme for missions this year with the Christian Missionary Alliance is peculiar people. We want to be people who live in such a way that it might seem strange to the unbeliever, but is intentional and strategic. So we might do things that look a little crazy, but there's a reason behind what we do. We want to be people who are ready to do the less than usual. So, yeah, something out of the norm, trying new things, going a new route to work, just to intentionally talk to a specific barista, for example, and build a specific connection with somebody. We don't want to be just receivers of the gospel. And peculiar people are not just receivers of the gospel, but they are people who live it and share it with the people of the world. And so, yeah, there's, again, just that intentionality and strategic element of how we live that might make us look peculiar to other people, but yet it's for the purpose of bearing fruit, the purpose of loving the Lord and loving our neighbors. So what does it mean for me to live intentionally? Well, it means choosing to seek and to know and to delight in the Lord, who transforms our lives and transforms my life in purposeful ways. And when we live intentionally, we also live missionally. Peculiar people will want to bring people to God and God to the people. God is passionate about all that. He's passionate that all the people of the world would have access to him and access to the good news. And those who are passionate about God are also going to be passionate about that too. As I taught this to my summer groups in Ensenada, I asked them, what does it mean to live missionally? And probably the best response that I got was from a teenage girl in the last week, the last group of my summer. And she said, she described it as such, that it's to intentionally live for the purpose of sharing the gospel. And I just thought that was beautifully worded. So I wrote that down immediately just so I wouldn't forget it. But we want to live missionally. Why do we want to live missionally? Well, it's part of God's very heartbeat. We serve a missional God. Missions began all the way back in Genesis and is a theme that's woven throughout the entirety of the Bible. He set apart the Jewish people in order that through their relationship with the Creator God, others would witness the love of the Father and desire that as well. Like there's, you know, stories of Ruth and Rahab, women who were from other people groups that were not Jewish, and yet they saw the love of the Father, the power of the Father, and wanted to be a part of that and became part of the Jewish people. And that was missions in action way back in Genesis and other Old Testament Bibles, books. The Great Commission is, of course, probably one of the most famous mission verses, probably, and it's found in Matthew 28, 19, and 20. And they're pretty well-known verses, and it's not, but the Great Commission is not a command, or sorry, it's not an option, but a command. It's not just for the random people, kind of like me, who get that call to go overseas and live abroad in a different place, but instead it's a command that's been given to every single Christ follower. We are all called to live missional lives wherever we are. So what does that look like? We talked about loving the Lord and loving our neighbor. And of course, the Great Commission outlines these tasks of going, making disciples, and baptizing. But what are some tangible ways that we can intentionally live for the purpose of sharing the gospel? If all of us have the same mission call, if all of us, all who follow Christ, have the same Great Commission on our lives, then what can you guys be doing while God has called you to live here in Olympia? One of the things that I did with all of my groups, and I'll probably continue, I'm sure I'll continue this in Guadalajara, is I think all of the groups who came down to Ensenada at one point in time, like right before they left to come down, they were brought in front of the church, and the church pastors and elders laid hands on them and prayed for them and commissioned them to go to Ensenada and serve for the week that they were there. Well, just like this verse, the Great Commission, and in that same kind of concept, I thought it was important for me to then, at the end of my week, essentially commission them to go back home and continue the work that God has called them to do. People who, if God has you living here in Olympia, until he calls you to another place, your Great Commission is to be fulfilled right here in this city. And sure, he might want you to do global things as well from time to time, but your commission is here for the time that God has called you to be here. So what can you do? How can you live missionally right here and now? As you read the Bible, throughout the entirety of the Bible, it becomes clear that God has a heart for widows, orphans, and strangers. There are many, many verses. This list here is not even a full list. It's just a list of some verses I found right off the bat that address widows, orphans, and strangers, and God's heart for caring for them. Why this group? Well, it's probably because they're more vulnerable. Their network, their people group, their family is smaller. The widow is missing a spouse, and the orphan is missing their parents, so they don't have as big of a family network to support them. They're possibly poor, which also can impact their vulnerability. They don't have the means to necessarily live extravagantly or live freely. They might have to be financially dependent on other people. So I think this is why, I believe this is why God has a heart for caring for them, because of their vulnerability and because of their aloneness, their solidarity. Solitarity. I can't think of the word at the moment, sorry. So this is not just God's heart in the Bible. Like that wasn't his heart from Genesis to Revelation, and yet it's no longer his heart. It still remains his concern today. So how can you guys care for widows, orphans, and strangers? I just thought of a couple things. This is not by any means a comprehensive list, I'm sure. But one idea is to volunteer with some senior citizen program to help drive senior citizens to their appointments or grocery shopping, helping them with home repairs, things that might seem kind of minor. They might take an hour or two a week, but really are blessing them and creating that relationship with people strategically in the community. For the orphans, like that of course, in today's world looks a little bit different than maybe in the times of the Bible, but there are mentoring programs for kids in foster care. You can volunteer at schools helping kids who maybe their parents are working and they don't get adequate homework training at home because their parents are working so much. Well, maybe just by tutoring and mentoring and discipling, those kinds of things for kids would be a really advantageous thing to participate in. And then, of course, there's child sponsorship programs with multiple organizations. And as for strangers, I recently read this one book called Internationals Who Live Among Us by Neil Parolo. I just read this, actually. It's a fantastic book. I highly encourage you to pick it up and read it. It's a book that talks about, well, the subtitle is Doing World Missions at Home. It's talking all about like different people groups that are here among us and what are some practical ways that you can serve and work with them. So if you are a reader, I would encourage this one. A couple quotes that he offers in his book are these. First one is, 40% of our nation's people are of an ethnic minority that represents, this is just for the United States, this represents 130 million people who were created by God to worship Him. 12 million immigrants come to America every year, and yet less than 10% are ever befriended by an American, much less a follower of Christ. So there's great opportunity. There's minorities are all around us. There's immigrants coming all around us. And we can start out by just being a friend. That would be a great first step. Another quote that he says, that Neil Parolo shares in this book is, of the 55 million speakers of other languages in the homes of America, 34 million speak Spanish. So if you are at a place, and I don't know if there's youth in here, but if you are thinking about which foreign language to study, Spanish might not be such a bad option based on that. It is estimated that by 2035, there will be no ethnic majority in the United States. The majority of Americans will be minorities. So the majority of the population will just be made up of different minority groups, and the Anglo-Caucasian group will be a minority in that. Did you know, this is from the IMB.org. I forget what that stands for, but international missions, perhaps something, but it's a little bit bigger than what I'm seeing. So this is a really good website that has lots of information and statistics about people on the move. But did you know that due to conflict and persecution, 65.3 million people have been forcibly displaced and scattered among the world? That is the population of the United Kingdom. And 45% of that 65.3 million people are under 18. So you might think, like, Mindy, I'm not so much, I don't like working with adults so much, but kids are my niche. Well, here you go. 45% of 65 million are under 18 and need to know the love of the Lord, can be friended by your children, can be ministered and mentored by you, and there's great opportunity. The next quote that I have from the same website is, U.S. college campuses host 1 million international students each year. 75% of these students will never see inside of an American's home or house. There is a tremendous opportunity to meet the nations at our front door. We just need to step outside. We just need to step outside and invite people in. And And again, it just starts with being a friend. Like, these people come, whether to come and be to study or to work or whatever, and just to be their friend, welcome them into your house, share about your culture, ask about their culture. It doesn't have to be super stressful. It can be just very relational, which hopefully you guys all enjoy relationships with people. Cross-cultural missions can include ministry to, these are just a list of people. This list of people is all covered in this book, The Internationals Who Live Among Us. But it can include ministry to international students, TCKs or MKs, that stands for third culture kids or missionary kids. So kids who have a passport for one country, and then yet they grew up in another country and they're not really part of either country because they didn't identify with their home country, but yet they don't know the American culture either. So they're kind of this like third culture. Illegal aliens are another opportunity. International business people, international visitors, refugees, ethnic communities, like these are people who are all around us every day. Again, it's just a matter of being relational and being their friend. And through that, it's all for the purpose of sharing the gospel. We live missionally, we engage intentionally for the purpose of sharing the gospel with people. And it might just start off with welcoming people into our lives, sharing our culture, sharing holidays with them. It might be more interactive. It might include tutoring, practicing English with people, maybe the church deciding to sponsor a refugee family and helping them settle into their new home. Ignoring the stranger is not an option for people who follow Christ, for people who have a relationship with Christ. Regardless of whatever your political stance is, regardless of what your thoughts are on illegal immigrants or immigration or anything, besides your political viewpoints, the Bible clearly tells us to care for them, to care for strangers in our midst. And we can see that the world is on the move. The world is all around us. You no longer have to go to Africa or China or Germany or Mexico or any other country to engage in cross-cultural missions. The world is on the move. The world is coming here to Olympia, to Washington State, and it's right here all around us. And so it's just a matter of loving and serving and welcoming them into your life, and you've already been commissioned to do so. It's in the Bible. Lastly, I just want to give you a couple extra verses about living missionally and intentionally and what that looks like. In 2 Chronicles, there's this great verse that says, 2 Chronicles 69, that says, "For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his." God wants to show off and reveal himself through intentional people who are faithfully seeking to join in God's work. And when we live intentionally for his purpose, God promises that he is going to show up powerfully. That's what that verse is promising right there. And then just as like that first verse that I shared in Habakkuk, it says, "Look among the nations and wonder and be astounded, because he is doing a work that we would not believe even if told." Like, he is at work. He is already revealing himself. And the question is just whether or not we are going to engage and see it, or whether or not we will miss it. I want to leave you with this quote by Tim Crouch. Tim Crouch is the Vice President of International Missions, Ministries, at the head office of the Christian Missionary Alliance. So he's my boss's boss's boss, somewhere up there. And he said this: "There are things that God wants to do in the world. He's the missionary. He's on the move. He's not asking us to do something for him. He's asking us to come and do something with him." And that's the distinction. He's extending the invitation to all of us to engage in missions, to live lives that are intentional and missional, and it's just a matter of, will we, as Christ followers, participate in that call? Will we have eyes to see and ears to hear and minds to understand what he's doing and jump in on that? Or are we going to allow the busyness of the world, the busyness of our lives, to distract us? And you know what? I get it. I, even as a missionary, can get busy with my own world on the mission field that I fail to live missionally, even though I'm the missionary. But it's all about intentionality. While I'm in Mexico, while I'm here, it's about intentionally looking for however God wants to reveal himself and show off, and the people that he wants to put in my life and cross paths with. And it's just, I just want to encourage you guys in that to continue this pursuit of being a missional people right here in Olympia, because that's where God has called you to be. So thank you for letting me share.